This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. Roomage is back.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
Good to be back.
Yeah,
How long's it been?
Well, it's two episodes, right?
Oh, right.
And how's it been listening to the episodes without you in?
It's hard, man.
Yeah.
Everyone's
They've been really good.
Yeah, they have. They've been very concise.
I want to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It hasn't been worse for your absence.
No.
I've just been straight up with
you. But you did ask me back today.
Yeah, but it's only because I now can't make it.
It's good to have
you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And what have you been up to?
I made a show with Liam Williams.
Go on, it's fine.
It's on BBC Three.
Yeah.
It's called Please Like.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it?
It's available on app. Have you seen it?
I've seen it. I watched the first episode. I haven't seen the second one yet.
Yeah, so it's out every Saturday. It's about YouTubers, world of YouTubers, the documentary.
It's good. It's really good. I'm not just saying it because Rupert's here and he needs it, but
yeah,
it is good.
I do need it.
Yeah. So it's good.
I've been working on that, and that's why I haven't been around for a bit.
No.
But thank you for having me back.
No, it's good to have you back, mate. And I'm sure when something else kicks off, you'll leave us again to do whatever the fuck you're doing.
You'll leave us.
I mean the royal us.
All right.
Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like the podcast is what I'm talking about. Don't be a prick, mate. Okay. We've given you the plug now. Do you know what I mean? Don't be an arsehole about it.
I'm extending the plug out.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
This is the bit where we introduce our guest.
We are absolutely stone cold delighted to be joined by the most exciting guy in music right now, Loyal Khana. Hello, mate.
Yes, how you doing?
I was trying to think of the best, like,
intro.
Tagline, but
yeah, it's Stone Cold.
Stone Cold,
yeah. Wrestling
it. Yeah, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm with it.
Stone Cold Loyal.
How are you, mate? You good?
Yeah, I'm very good. Very good. Quite warm in here. But good.
It's really... Oh, shit, yeah. Mate. It's really warm in here, yeah. First of all, congratulations on the album.
Thank you very much.
It's great.
Amazing, right?
Let me keep it. I never speak it and keep it a secret. It'd be peak if any geezer would hear it and then repeat it. So we keep it deep and out of reach from all the Egypts. If you need it, best believe it, you won't seek it. Locked up in my room, deep cocoon, like you're digging in crates. Already dug where you're digging, so you're digging is bait. Keeping it straight, starts until late. Sample the breaks, then we move on to the groove. Grabbing that sample at 8 seconds.
Also, I'm really sorry to say, I'm a massive fan. Fan, mate, but I was actually I was introduced to you by Roomage.
I'm just spreading the word.
He's the guy.
That's what it's about.
So what happened? How did you find out about him before me? Because normally you know shit.
Yeah, it's true. I think my flatmate put me onto you.
Yeah,
my flatmate Jamie. So
I came to see you on Saturday night.
Yes, you did.
What a show, man. Yeah. Is that the response you normally get?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because with the shows, they've kind of been growing bit by bit. So the last show we played in London was at Coco. So it's like, I think it's like 600 extra people the last couple of nights. But yeah, I mean, it's been a bit nuts. It's weird. We kind of seem to have I've kind of gone under the radar, but also been playing quite big shows at the same time, which is quite a weird thing, quite a nice thing. But yeah, last night was... Night before last, sorry, was one of those nights.
Crazy. Were you you sort of looked quite overwhelmed by it? But...
Yeah. I mean, I think what I always kind of tell myself before each show is I kind of go out there and go, okay, now you've got to go out there and act like you're used to it now and kind of play it cool.
Yeah.
And every single time I really struggle to do it. But yeah, it's like that's always in my head because I feel like it just gets a bit much. Like four fucking songs in, I'm still going, thanks so much for coming. Can't believe you came down.
So humble.
Even though I've known it's been sold out for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I didn't see it coming. I thought it was going to be empty.
I'm sort of the opposite way. I sort of pretend that I'm really touched, but I couldn't give less of a fuck.
But then equally, if it's not a full house, you're livid.
Oh, if it's not a full house, absolutely devastated. And the other thing is, if it's not a full house, I'll start berating people that have come. No, do you mean, like, why didn't you fucking tell more people, mate?
You're meant to do it, mate.
Do you know what I mean? You say you're a fan.
That's what they pay their money for.
Like, tell people. There's a seat next to you, mate. Do you know what I mean? It was great. It was a great show, though. Yeah. We're sort of always moaning about how live hip hop doesn't really stand up.
Yeah, man.
Something that you're conscious of?
Yeah,
doing
I tell you what, it's something that I've known about just from going to see shows and always kind of not gone away disappointed because I've always been a massive fan. Because when I've seen them, I'm only 22, so when I go to see guys who play now, they're doing these like 20th anniversary reunion tours or whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's always going to be different. You know what I mean? But yeah, it is. It's something that there's just never been much to the stage or much to the show. It's kind of like, yeah, we're going to get paid, we're going to get on with it and get out. But I think, I don't know, I was at drama school for a bit.
Yeah.
And that was something that kind of like hammered a lot of belief into when you play a show, putting on a show. I mean, one of my old teachers said to me, they were like, you know, you're playing tours now, you're allowed to put on a show, you've got an hour slot to do whatever you want. So yeah. Do whatever you want. Don't just feel like you have to do, you know, you and a DJ and that's it and nothing else on the stage. So
yeah
it was like a freedom that we tried to run with, but not too much, you know what I mean?
Does your show get better if the audience are better? Because for comedians, obviously we're totally reliant on laughs, but like...
Yeah, massively so, yeah. So we played in Birmingham recently, and I think the trouble is, it gets better if I'm a bit more drunk.
Right.
the drunker I am, the better I get, and then until I'm too drunk, and then it gets it's terrible. Or if the crowd is really good. Like when we played in Birmingham, and like the crowd were a lot older, and they just weren't moving around, and it was like a Sunday night or something, so nothing happened. So I kind of went out there, threw my hands in the air, and there was just silence, and I was like, oh, shit, this is going to be awful. But I think the thing about it is it can kind of work in a good way sometimes, because if the crowd is not up for it, then it makes me work twice as hard, because I feel like I have to get them up for it. It kind of depends what mood I'm in. Yeah. If I'm in the mood to go, okay, cool, you don't care, I'm going to try and make you care, then that's quite a good show. But if I just go, you don't care, fuck, I don't care, then fine, it's fucking horrible. Then
Ramesh, just kinda... listen and learn, mate.
Well, that second, I really identify with that second approach.
Yeah, you're not feeling it, all right, cool. You're going to hate this then.
do you think, like, the thing I want to ask is that your album is... it's really reflective, and it's a lot of it is very down tempo. It feels like quite a brave album to put out in the current climate when it's all about sort of big bangers and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So were you worried about that, or did you not think about what was coming out at the moment? Just think, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do.
I think that's what it was. I just was trying my hardest not to think about it, because I guess I kind of always see myself as a bit of an outsider in terms of like the music scene that's going on, because it's very difficult to notice when it's you know, and I'm not around kind of all the people who are seen to be quite, you know, quite successful or who are doing well or on radio or whatnot. So when I was making an album, I wasn't trying to match anyone else.
Yeah.
You know? And because there's been such a like a resurgence of grime, which is something I grew up with, it was something that seemed to take the focus. I mean, I could kind of get away with whatever I wanted to do without kind of causing too much trouble. You know what I mean? But it's just the only way I've ever known how to make tunes. You know, whenever I've made tunes, that's the kind of sound. I don't know, it must just be a collection of my influences. I'm big into Common, he's like my favourite rapper. And so that was one of the things where he was kind of doing the same stuff a little bit. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And Rebel Clef is like,
yes,
what a talented dude.
Yeah, genius. All rounder. triple threat.
Yeah, it's mad, right? So have you known him? Is he like a long-term...
Yeah, friend? Well, it's funny, we kind of got match.com'd like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago. I was talking to my friend, I was at uni, I was just about to go to uni, and my friend was kind of hanging out with him a little bit, and was like, oh, he knew that I was kind of writing raps but didn't have any beats, and he knew he was making beats with no raps, and we're at this party and he kind of introduced us to each other and we just hit it off. We started chatting, and then he was like, oh, you should come round and hang out, and I was really nervous about it. Went round to his house and I met his mum, and then we sat for a little while kind of in awkward silence, and then he put on this one beat and we just started making music, and then from then on out we kind of realised everything that we used to talk about we just had in common. So when it came to creating stuff, it made perfect sense, because we were already on the same wavelength, on the same kind of channel.
When you first met him and talked to him,
did he
rap for him at all? When did he play any of his beats?
I mean, do you know what? He'd heard one of my tunes already. Which kind of got
that out of the
way.
Because that's a lot of fucking pressure.
Because if you just
turn up to his house
and
then started rapping, and then he's like, oh.
And then, as soon as he opened the door, just going, yo, what's up? It's
like a bit in here.
I just thought I'd try this beat out. Yeah. Okay, you're joking, right?
See what we can do with it. No, it was awkward as hell at first, because that's the thing I've always found, like, with sessions I find that in general, like working, I tend not to really work with people I don't know. That was kind of my rule of thumb, was if I can't have a conversation with them about something else first, I can't make music with them, just because it's the weirdest thing being in a studio with someone and them going, right, okay, cool, now do your thing that you do. I don't want to right now. The thing is, especially when it's kind of shit that I'm writing about, is like, if I don't feel comfortable opening up to someone, and I can't open up like to a weird little mic in a room while they're just sitting there going, oh, yeah, give me some, what do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange thing.
When we do, like, when you do comedy writers' rooms, if you don't get on with that, or, like, it's really difficult to get a proper vibe in did I say vibe?
Yeah.
In a writer's
room.
Stone cold vibe. It's so difficult to get a stone cold vibe in the groove, do you know what I mean? But, like,
here's a little bit that we like to call. How did you get into hip-hop?
How did you first get into hip-hop?
My cousin, my big cousin, was in a rap group called Lords of Rap.
Yeah.
And so there was he gave me a record actually when I was really young, and it was like a London Posse vinyl, but on the B side they had a track. He used to pick me up from primary school, and he used to rap stuff to me. He had this one tune, it's the fucking nastiest thing. It's
really appropriate for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, it was so horrible. It was all about sandpaper and grit and women and it was awful. You can put them all together, I'm not giving it to you,
Put it on there.
Please.
We'll drop it in,
yeah.
Step up with your girl and I'll rip off her baggy. You see her titties are saggy and her face favour shaggy. Not Scrappy or Daphne, but Scooby-Doo's sister. MCs at test get burst like a blister. You like the girls who come scabby and sporty, or the fat mampy beats who come built like Pavarotti.
But yeah, but I mean, it was off the back of that. I mean, it was... My dad used to listen to a lot of David Bowie and whatnot, and Leonard Cohen, and so did my mum. And they were heavy into storytellers like Bob Dylan and stuff. But so when I was looking for rap, that's what I ended up looking for was like storytellers, but just in kind of through the medium that I knew.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
So that, is that the type of hip hop that you're more attracted to? Then?
You know what? Yeah, the other rapper when I was growing up who I really really loved was Ludacris though.
Yeah.
He was on a complete other side of the spectrum when it came to rap music, but there was just something about him that I latched onto because he was still interesting. You know, it wasn't like he was just kind of dribbling out stuff that didn't make much sense. He was giving you something. It just was a bit.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? But like the thing is, like Ludacris and people like that, it's like there are some rappers that like you properly buy into everything about them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's not just like you'd hear a song and you think, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
You're sort of into them as a person, and the same thing with like comedy as hip hop is like, if I listen to an album, I'd like it to be the way I want it to be. Is they open a door into the way they look at the world, and for the duration of that album, you're looking at their filter,
completely.
And then that's it. But so much hip hop isn't like that, and so there are some artists, and it doesn't matter what type it could be, then, like, you know, for example, Clips, for example, all they talk about is dealing coke, do you know what I mean? You're Clips still entering their world, I think there's not so much of that, I do feel like you sort of get drawn to artists like that, do you know what I mean? Ludacris is definitely one of them,
because you're looking through this filter and thinking that that's exactly how he was living, you know, and he's talking about all the things that he's talking about, but it's interesting,
because
he has this kind of weird, it's almost like being a joker of the pack in a pack that's very, very serious. So you kind of feel like you fit in that group only because you kind of know him, you know? Yeah, it's interesting.
Rack your brains. Give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
And you're a massive Common fan, right?
Yes.
Is that your first hip-hop album?
Yeah, I think so. I bought Common's Beat and I bought Red Light District by Ludacris at the same time. And I think a D12 one, but it was a knockoff because it was at this like country fair. So it was like
D12, right? Okay, now that you're talking about your cousin that used to. So Bizarre from D12, right?
He's your cousin.
No, he's not my cousin. But I swear to God, right? D12, they got most of them can rap, and then Bizarre just like spits the most disgusting. It doesn't even rhyme a lot of the time. They'll just be a really amazing track. And then Bizarre come and go, "Fuck your mom," and then in the head, and then one of her eyeballs came out, and I said, "That's what you get for fucking looking at me, bitch."
Mass murder without a mask, a broken arm without a cast, stripper without an ass, a slut without a dad.
All the others just rolling their eyes at me.
But the most is that, like, how he's part of the group. I mean, is that so
put up with him?
He's fucking massive, isn't it? Yeah. So imagine like he just turned up and he went and goes, "I got some bars," and they go, "All right, is it good?" Because like last time, "No, it's good. And then he goes in, spits his ear, "I fucked your mum up her ass." And then like he comes out and they go, "Yeah, that was great. That was wicked. Yeah, I'll see you soon, Bizarre."
Don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. Yeah, this is the weirdest thing. I remember him on My Band, because that was the one I kind of got into it a lot from like music television.
Yeah.
You know, so like MTV Bass and Channel U, I used to flick between those two. And there was a lot of D12 and then My Band. So I only really ever used to hear the singles. I remember him being at the end of that. and really just thinking, I was thinking, why is he not actually rhyming?
I know.
Why is there zero flow in this? It was just words.
He reminds me of like one of those when you do an open mic comedy gig and there's one guy that just does all paedophile jokes. He's not any good, but he just gets a reaction from the audience. Yeah. And so he keeps doing that, going, I always get the biggest reaction. Yeah, it's people are disgusted, man. But you're a massive Common fan, right?
Yeah,
so, like Water for Chocolate,
yes.
I'm always banging on about that. Yeah, it's incredible.
Right? It's ridiculous. It's him and Jay Dilla, like, doing what they do. It's something I've listened to over and over again. My mum is a big fan of it because I bought her B and like Water for Chocolate so she could listen to him in the car when she drives to work. And yeah, she struggled with the skits on like Water for Chocolate. Even if it's snowing, you need to be out there hoeing.
That
kind of stuff that she really didn't handle. But
yeah,
the tune she loves. I mean,
it's so weird that, isn't it? Because like the album is so beautiful and there's so many great moments in it, and then you just think, oh god, this jars a little.
It's just a bit much, isn't it? Fucking hell. Yeah, I remember playing it. I remember listening playing for the first time. I'm kind of forgetting about the skits because once you've listened to it for a bit, you kind of cherry pick the tunes that you listen to the most. It's difficult with an album like that because I love it all, but then you forget about the skits and the skits come on in the car and you're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like I remember like I used to be, well I still am a big fan of the Beatnuts. Their first album, I think it's Street Level or something. Like because my wife, I have this ongoing battle with my wife who like just is not a hip hop fan at all.
Okay.
Right, she only likes the Roots and like that's it. Right?
Okay, cool. So then, another, it's like, yeah, at least if it was
yeah,
gonna be
that's
one,
good.
Yeah, one
yeah.
group.
But so I had Beatnuts on and I was going, no, this is good stuff. It's really good music. And then there's one lyric on the Beatnuts, but it's like. I get bitches to make me sandwiches and scratch my ass when it itches. My wife looked at me like, seriously, you're a father of three and listen to shit.
You're a fan of this.
Do you like all the Common stuff? Or
I do. I've listened to his new albums, not as much, like the one where it's like half his face and half a lion or something.
I
haven't listened to that much. And his new one has come out, which is like the sound, part of like a soundtrack of a new movie.
Yeah.
And I think he still has it, but I think it's just a bit fewer and further between.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because he's sort of got more and more sort of out there.
Yeah.
Like sort of, and I still was like, this is still good. Mm. But like you said, then you listen to an album, there's a few moments of brilliance and then there's a lot of sort of what I would say is borderline unlistenable. Yeah. I don't know, it's not for me.
I agree, it's a weird one. I kind of come to the albums and wait and feel like the little moments of brilliance are still worth it, you know,
you have to
wait for it. But I think it's just, back in the day, he was one of the few kind of rappers for me who could make an album and every tune you could listen to it, you could put it on and it would run through and there'd be a story to it, you know. Like we were saying before, you know, you open up and you look into looking through someone's filter. But now it more seems like he makes like one or two really good tunes and goes, now I need to kind of do the rest of this album to package around these few tunes.
Yeah.
But he's still a brilliant writer.
I don't know if he tried to get a commercial vibe going on or something like that, because
he did. Well, he worked with a few more commercial artists, which I didn't think he needed
to do. There's like, because he obviously did a tune with Lily Allen, didn't
he?
I don't necessarily have a problem with rappers doing like sort of left field collaborations, but when it's just they've phoned in a hook, do you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like they've come up with this song together. We need something to sort of take this over the top,
and they don't match. There's no collaboration in there. Yeah,
I love it when R&B singers get like a guest rapper, and the rapper does a verse that's absolutely nothing to do with the tune.
Definitely not there. Jay-Z did a verse on Another Level, didn't he?
That's right.
He blatantly just emailed it over, just like found this old
wow, just looking at the back of the sofa for eight bars that he could just sort of send over,
pulled out a USB and just picked it over. It's awful, but that kind of stuff happens a lot. It doesn't happen as much now as it used to happen. Especially when I was watching MTV Bass back in the day, is every tune would be like this is the new R&B singer from so and so, and then the track would play out for about 2 minutes, and then out of the blue, this guy kind of comes out in the hoodie and goes, "Yeah, fuck your mom."
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What you listen to at the moment? Do you listen to hip-hop at the moment? Do you listen to everything?
Yeah, I'm still listening to a lot of hip-hop. It's kind of what I listen to the most, I guess. My little brother's kind of my ear to the new school, really. Mm. So he's the one who he kind of introduced me to guys like Logic and Earl Sweatshirt and that, which I do listen to kind of loosely. But I still kind of... What's so brilliant about hip-hop is there's so much... such a large back catalogue that there's still stuff, still albums I get given on a daily by Rebel Clef especially that I haven't heard. Mm. Like, he just put me onto... and some old like Camp Low that I hadn't heard before, and it blew my mind, and I think that's what I'm more excited about, is just kind of going backwards as opposed to going forward.
Camp Low. Mm. Have you listened to
What was that big tune they did?
Lucino.
Yeah.
Like, but that song, it takes like, anything they do, takes about 3 weeks to understand what the fuck they're on about. But it sounds amazing. It sounds amazing being like, I ain't got a clue what this guy's.
Introducing Phantom of the Dark, walk through my heaven with levitation from reefers, drenching deep as an E7, showboating with Rugas, flash vines, Belafonte Jigger. Let's get for what this worth as we confiscate your figures.
And one of them, I think English is like, maybe I've made this up, maybe this is like, I'm coming from immigration here, but I'm pretty sure one of them, English isn't his first language. I think.
That's really impressive.
Look it up. I mean, I'm sure if I'm wrong, Twitter will tell me.
Straight away.
Mate, if you get anything wrong, just say you know.
Yeah. I'm learning slowly but surely.
Normally, guests get it all right, but if I say anything wrong, I mean, I got a Dr. Dre lyric a few months ago wrong, and I've been fucking, I'm paying for it ever since.
Do you reply to them, like, just say, apologise?
Sometimes I do, Actually, somebody tweeted me on the tour afterwards saying that was one of the worst things I've ever seen. I hated it.
What, of the show?
Of the show, yeah. So I replied, I don't know why I replied, I replied saying, I'm sorry you didn't enjoy it.
I think that's the best approach, though, that sort of...
Well, I'm just wasn't in a good place. Mm. You know, like, I think... Do you get any shit tweets?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I don't get that many. I tell you what, I've kind of stopped looking, because I feel like there probably is quite a few out there now, but I kind of left it when I was on a bit of a high, when I was a bit younger. There was only like 20 people who knew who I was. So I was like, yeah, well, these 20 people like me, so I'll stop here. But every now and again, you see like little things pop up. I think I've seen more things about, I don't see the hype. That's kind of thing I get a lot.
It's a very British thing, though, isn't it? Because when you're sort of an underground discovery, then people are very excited. And then when you blow up, people just be like, I don't get it.
But this is the strange thing, because I really feel like I really haven't blown up at all yet. I always compare it to getting fat. It's like, you know, you don't know you're getting fat until one day you look in the mirror and you go, oh, shit, I'm huge. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's the same as becoming successful and whatever
you
want to
do. It's weird that you use that analogy with me in the room. That is, I feel like,
are you getting fat?
Mate, I'm already fucking, look at this shit, mate. Anyway. but what do you have an idea of what you think? Do you have an idea of what you think making it? Because there's no... With what you're doing, how do you know?
Yeah,
you know,
that's the thing I've got. I've got no idea. I mean, it's a weird thing, because it's very obvious when you're doing, you know, it, back when I was little, I used to watch it on TV, because, yeah, okay, cool. You have the chain, you have, you know, there's like 7,000 women in your video and you've got like a limo. And that to any like 6-year-old boy, that's how you've made it. Do you know what I mean? Because that's all that you're being shown. But as you grow, I don't know. Like, I mean, if I could just continue to make tunes and not have to get another job, then that's kind of that's kind of it for me, you know, get to see the world, which is what I get to do now. So I guess if I think about it, maybe I'm doing all right. But I don't know, it's because you can never, I guess, once you, the second you think that you've kind of achieved what you wanted to achieve, you're It was a dangerous place to be because you've got no drive. There's nothing else to do. But I've done
I know
it now.
That's the problem. If you think like I'm doing it, I've done it. Then that's when you start to see people just.
Do you ever get
shit.
It?
Do I ever get
it?
Yeah,
just think I've
Mate,
done it.
I no, but I tell you what I do. I'm looking forward to it. What I want is to get my profile up to the point where first of all I can stop being polite to people because I know that I've got to such a high level I can start being a real prick. Because right now you have to show a bit of humility in it because you don't know if it could go away. Right, but what I want to do is get to that sort of that level where I know, fuck it, I'm set, mate. So fuck you, and get me my Skittles, right? and then, as I slide into retirement, I want to start making some really shit decisions, like. Oh God, have you seen Romesh is doing Panto? You know, stuff like that. That's what I want to do.
I'd love to see that as your career plan.
That'd be brilliant.
I want to aggravate people with how shit what I'm doing is. Have you seen Romesh is trying to bring back Dancing on Ice? Like stuff like that. I just like really want to, I reckon 5 to 10 years I'll start bringing that shit in. Do you know what I mean? Like you'll hear about it. Oh, Romesh is the new face of CBeebies. Like stuff like that.
He's on the jump.
Yeah, it's on the jump. Yeah,
all three of those things are really, really realistic things as well.
Scary, yeah. You'll be listening back to this in 10 years' time.
Called it.
No, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so your album is very personal. One of the things that you said on stage at your gig was that people think you're a miserable bastard, which I can really connect with.
Yeah, they really do.
Was that a conscious decision, or do you just write what you feel like writing?
Yeah, I think the thing about it is I always end up writing when I'm in a bad mood or when I'm low. I really struggle to write when I'm angry, because when I'm angry, it's difficult to kind of hold that energy down. And when I'm happy, I want to be outside, or I want to be, you know, with people that I love, or, you know, or having a beer. It's never like, oh, I'm in a really good mood, I want to document this. For me, writing from when I was younger was always just a thing of not cheering myself up, but getting stuff out of my head.
Venting?
Yeah, completely, because I always say the wrong, like, you probably noticed from being in this room, but I always say the wrong thing in conversation, like, because I've got ADHD and I'm very impulsive, and I've always been very conscious of that. But when I write, it's the one time I get to kind of actually have a look at what I'm going to say, think about it, and then say the right thing.
Yeah.
Or not the right thing, but what I want to say.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was something that, it's strange kind of recording it and having it out, because it's kind of what I've wanted to say to people I love, like my mum or you know, girlfriend or my brother or whatnot. I think that's the kind of thing that's been important, really.
Yeah.
Strange.
And then, so are you not thinking about the audience at all when you're writing that stuff?
No, I mean, I'd be lying if now I said I wasn't at all. I try my hardest not to, you know. And some days it's kind of easy. The most, it depends what I'm writing about. But in the most part, yeah, it's almost like I've written it down before. I've had a chance to see what people think, because I write a lot of stuff, and then I usually go to Red Bull and go, yeah, I don't think we can put this one out. Like, you know, I've done it. It's recorded. What do you think? And he's like, yeah, we have to get this one out. And that's kind of the battle that goes on most.
Yeah.
In the most part, yeah.
I remember LL Cool J did a track where he said, people have said I've got no metaphor, so this is for you. And then he did a track with some of the worst metaphor words I've ever heard in the fucking history of rap music.
Can you remember it?
He said something about his balls being hairy like the Lion King.
Wow. don't mind it.
That is tragic.
Definitely.
I mean, you've got to put a bit more thought into it.
Yeah, why? If you brag about that?
I know. Yeah, I mean, hairy balls, mate, one, it's not a unique feature.
No.
What are you bragging about, that you've gone through puberty? Yeah. I don't... Oh, man. Hip-hop grapes. Is there anything you don't like about hip-hop?
Like, egos for one. But that's kind of in any job or any kind of, any, especially in the creative world. But yeah, this kind of new wave of, like, the thing I only got asked about recently, like mentioned to recently, was the thing called mumble rap.
Yeah.
Fuck is that?
I know. It's so, mate, like this thing where, like, just lyrics. Well, that's the thing that I think is interesting about you, actually, because, and I know you won't say this yourself, but like, the lyrics are so important in your tunes, right? Like what you're saying and stuff like that. And that's why when we came to your gig, I felt like such an old prick, because there were so many young people. But it was exciting to me to see young people... God, I sound like such an old fart. But it was exciting to me to see young people listening to quality lyricism, because like this mumble rap is dog shit, man. Yeah, like in terms of lyrical skills. The thing is, there's two like branches of hip hop fans. There's people that like that sort of lyrical stuff, and there's people that like that sort of mumble stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Nas on Instagram recently like put up a picture of Future's new album cover and said, "I'm loving this album," and he got absolutely.
Did anybody get? He got ripped.
He got slaughtered, mate.
But it's really interesting that kind of stuff, because it is this thing of I don't know, because there's a J. Cole tune called Let Nas Down. You heard
that? Yeah, I remember.
The idea of like there's a lyric on it. It's like, "Long live your idols, may they never be your rivals." And I think it is an important thing to keep in. I mean, those guys are. I don't know. It's weird. You think about all my favorite rappers who passed away, what they would be doing now, and it kind of gets me scared to think, because it gets to the point where you're just, you know, you're either trying to stay relevant, or you know, you've got commitments or whatever. You're trying to kind of maintain this lifestyle that you've been living forever, and you kind of have to find new ways of.
I do think it's difficult, isn't it? Because
it's a heartbreak.
Yeah, because like you look at some artists and they change or whatever, and you think, okay, that's good. But there's a thin line between changing and remaining relevant and exciting. And also just jumping on whatever happens to be amazing at that time.
But that is the trouble about it, is exactly that. Is in this new wave, because before it wasn't a problem, because all the new rappers who were massive, look all the people who kind of, if you took all the rappers, all the weird kind of mumble rappers now, who are like at the top of the, I don't want to say top of the game, but the people who can sell the most records, and people know about them. It's like popular culture. Whereas you go back to like Eminem and whatnot from when I was kind of growing up a little bit before, and even in the decades before that, even Biggie and whatnot, even if they were making kind of more commercial rap tunes when they were at their pinnacle, they were very talented rappers, and you could put them bar for bar with any rapper who was on the underground or whatnot, and they could still spin them, or they could at least kind of put up a good fight in a battle. Whereas now you have people who can't rap. But I like pushing rap culture, which is a shame, because there are so many good rappers out in America, but I think it is just, you know, and over here, but
yeah, it's a mad one, because like that Future, that new Future album, I keep trying to listen to it because I think I must be missing something, but I'm not, I don't think. But like the beats are amazing, but like the production is amazing.
Yeah,
right?
Production is
and
crazy.
People always go, "Production's amazing, lyrics." But there are artists out there that have that production, actually can spit as well. Do you know what I mean? Not anywhere near as.
I think the difficulty with it as well is, I think, because that kind of sometimes that music is so geared towards partying.
Yeah.
Then if you have that beat and you're trying to tell someone something important, then they don't have time to listen to it because they, you know, whatever the. Too fucked up out at like 3 o'clock in the morning when that tune comes on to go, "Oh my god, this is the one, like this is the one where he's talking about his mom or whatnot." So I think that's kind of where it falls into the, because there has to be a space for it, and this song I've only learned to appreciate recently is, as much as that I don't enjoy it or whatnot, there are people who enjoy it, and that's where it is. But it's so strange to me that kind of idols of mine are supporting it, do you know what I mean? Because it's like they spend their whole life talking about how, you know, all the rappers that they came up with couldn't rap, and they were the ones that could rap. Now all of a sudden, all these people are coming up like 20 years after,
and they're
going,
and they're bigging up people that can barely talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Completely.
It's
completely.
Insane, man.
Completely.
Do you know what I mean?
It's heartbreak, man. It really pissed me off. I saw a thing of like, well, I can't remember what the group's called. Like one of the kind of. They all look exactly the same.
Yeah.
All like the same kind of like weird like red dreads and whatnot.
Yeah.
But like there's one guy was like talking.
It's a little
about,
yachty shout. Yachty. Yeah, go.
He was like doing something on radio, but he was like just reciting, like reading a kid's book, reading a children's book over trap, over like this trap beat, and it was like I played it to my little brother. My brother was like, "This is all right." I was like, brilliant.
Yeah, it is annoying, but like I think that. I think what frightens me, it's bullshit, but like what I always get worried about is whenever you read like XXL or one of these magazines, like these stateside magazines, whenever they do like their freshman picks or whatever, like new artists, or they do their hottest new, it's always those kind of artists at the moment. And so then if you went through and went, "Okay, I'm going to listen to a track by this, but you just end up getting depressed by where it's going.
This is the thing, what is worried about me is about this thing of, you know, people are talking about like hip-hop culture and rap culture and people having a misconception with it and whatnot. But I think that is the trouble, because it is those things exactly that are feeding that. There's kind of rappers like Biggie Smalls, one of my favorite rappers. It's very obvious to say, but he's one of the few guys I know who could like break your heart and then make you smile in the same song. And that's a real talent.
Yeah.
Know? Not to be overlooked just because he was in like became like a massive rapper, you know?
Yeah. But even like with something like Biggie, is that like like, for example, if you look at the Hypnotize video,
yeah.
On the surface of
it,
people just like go, oh, it's fucking on a speedboat, like, with like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
but I know, I do agree, but I think the only thing about the only difference between it, because I was having this conversation about, you know, guys like Big L and whatnot, because they were all the things that I kind of, it's difficult because there's a lot of stuff I don't believe in, like, I don't believe in treating women terribly, like, they do, do you know what I mean? But there was a sign about it, as much as it was, you know, it was that fast lifestyle of whatever, they had nothing and they ended up having loads, is there was a craft to it, and they could tell you their story in a beautiful way. So, which is the difference between now, because it's the same thing fundamentally. I'm talking about shooting people, killing people, you know, women and whatnot in ways that they shouldn't be spoken about, but when they did it, it was you felt this weird kind of empathy or sympathy for them because they were telling you it in a way that brought you in, as opposed to just like with a craft.
I totally agree with you. And like, you listen to something like Juicy, where Biggie talks about his like getting from going nothing it is a beautiful story. Yeah. It's sort of a lovely rags to riches story, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like they people listen to those elements and they go, well, they're talking about having this, they're talking about designer clothes, whatever, but they don't have the chops. Mm-hmm. To actually do it properly, so they just take those elements. Yeah, it's like when somebody you meet a shit comedian that's really into Frankie Boyle, where like he's just gone, Frankie Boyle's really offensive, I'm going to do offensive.
Going to be really offensive,
but you haven't got. But Frankie Boyle's really clever and amazing.
Lovable, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Completely.
And you haven't got that. I totally agree with you. And also the other thing is it used to be you talk about the struggle and now you're doing it and now you've got this nap. But now they've a lot of rappers have cut out the beginning bit then just go, I've got shitloads of stuff.
I'm doing it.
One of the things I was going to ask you is your songs and your attitude. When I was watching on stage, you were saying things like, because you're 22, right?
Yeah.
You're talking like, your songs are like, feel like they're written by someone much older, like in terms, I mean that as a compliment.
Thank you.
But also, the way that you're talking on stage, like for example, you were saying stuff like, you wouldn't have the Daily Mail and the Sun at your, right? Yeah. But like, that, like you're 22, like have you had like, is it because your upbringing that you sort of have that sort of old head on young shoulders?
I guess so. I mean, yeah, I mean, through, you know, kind of no fault of mine, I was just forced to kind of grow up. I feel like a lot of my friends were meant to do the same, so I don't feel like it's like kind of individual to me. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time with just me and my mum for a little while. And, you know, she kind of toughened me up, so I kind of was trying to be kind of mature or kind of sensible for her in terms, obviously really wasn't because I'd have been really young, but she, you know, kind of was trying to teach me how to be a sensible man at a very young age. But yeah, I don't know, my granddad used to instill the same kind of values in me. It was always just a thing of, you know, knowing what was right and what was wrong. I feel like I've always had quite a good kind of moral compass, I hope, or have learnt it as I've grown.
And also, one of the things I've really wanted to get behind the movement is fuck Southern Rail, man.
Yeah, fuck Southern Rail so
fuck
much.
Em.
Literally
so
today,
hard.
Today fuck Southern Rail, because I was almost late to get here. I hate Southern Rail so much.
I fucking hate them, honestly.
And they don't care. And the thing about it is they're not sorry about it.
No.
And every time I hear, we're sorry to announce. They're not sorry to announce, because they do it every fucking day.
Just fucking, they should have announcements like, we're surprised to announce this one as well.
Yeah, literally.
That's what they should be doing.
It happened to me on New Year's Eve. I was really like smug conductor, and he was like, oh well, really sorry that your train is actually 3 minutes early. I was like, fuck off, man. Fuck off.
Yeah,
because it's kind of the worst kind of first world struggle I've ever, because I feel like a dick when I talk about it as well, because I tweet it out a lot and everyone kind of gets back to me and goes, yeah, it's bad, but you know, there's a lot of bad things going on in the world. And
you can't get to find out about it. I'm fucking stuck at Three Bridges Station, mate.
That's my head in,
but there's not going to be nothing, because it's all popped off because there was no, there was like big strikes because they're trying to get rid of the conductors.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know how I feel about that. Because one thing I do feel on the Southern train is safe.
Yeah.
Even if we're not going anywhere, I still feel like I'm kind of protected.
Yeah.
On a Southern train.
Yeah.
There's like,
you're certainly protected from any high speed accidents.
Yeah.
but fuck Southern Rail, man.
Fuck Southern Rail.
That's what we're going to call this podcast.
Yeah, fuck Southern Rail. Please call it that. That's what I'm going to call. That's what I'm going to call my next album.
I've tweeted that.
They never reply back to me.
No. They reply if you go. If you actually, the truth is, if you send them a genuine thing, like, can you tell me how to make this connection? They might tweet, but the problem is, I tweet them things like Southern Rail can eat a dick.
Yeah.
Like, so obviously, well, how do you reply to that? Yeah. We're just tucking into one now. You can't.
You know what I mean? Got fucking seven more to go, but you're on the list.
Live hip hop. You've supported loads of big. You supported Nas, right?
Yeah, supported Nas.
Who else have you supported?
MF Doom.
What was MF Doom? Was it actually him, or was it some other dude?
I don't know. I didn't know that he was. I supported MF Doom when I was like 16.
Oh my
17.
God.
Yeah. So I didn't know if I didn't know about him having like loads of different people coming out for his shows. I just knew MF Doom.
Yeah.
And we're going to see him and just being amazing. Like clouds, well then there now. Put out of nowhere. The sun couldn't prepare for how. Got scripts, whipped up all the quicker. The one who came to the party, sipped up all the liquor. Who they gonna stick the blame to that he came through? With this verse to name a few tamers, true shame you. We didn't meet him at all. We watched him do his sound check and watched his show in the crowd. But we went back to the backstage straight after his show, and there was just loads of like cut out masks like strewn around the backstage. So I just took them all, sold them on eBay.
Amazing.
But
he's like an enigma, isn't it?
It was mad. We went back and I was like, I wanted to ask him. I just wanted to chat to him. But he was gone. He was like, and everything was gone. It was just those masks. Like he just like spun around 100 times and then just flown out the wall.
Wow.
That is mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think he does that every
on purpose, just to freak out little kids like me? Yeah,
I'd love to do it. I'd love to have thought of doing that before I started, like, you know, like perpetuating a legend.
Knowing that, that's the thing, he must have just known he was going to be brilliant and massive. But it's such an exciting thing, because I always think, oh, it'd be so cool to have a mask.
Yeah.
But it's so late, because people just look at me and go, why is everyone trying to wear a mask?
Like, fucking if I had a mask.
Yeah.
What would it look like?
Huh?
What would it look like?
It'd be my face, but nobody would know. They just think that I'd just pick, yeah.
Before you grew a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I can tell the heat's starting to get to this podcast now.
Talk about Southern Rail and...
Well, listen, we're almost out of time, but I do want to talk about your... You do these... Is it chefing that you do for kids with ADHD?
Yeah, cooking school,
So what? So how does it... Talk me through how it works. What's the deal?
Yes, I've set up this little cooking school for kids with ADHD between the ages of 14 to 16.
Right.
But yeah, it's at a place called Central Street Kitchen in Old Street, and it's me and a friend. And we teach them kind of like...
Can you cook then?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, yeah. My gunner used to have a hotel in Scotland, and so he used to do a lot of the catering there. So I learned through them. They come in and we kind of cook quite simple things, but they're quite exciting things. We made like chicken ramen and like a salmon on croûte. So there's stuff that looks impressive but can be done really easily.
Yeah.
And it kind of stems from, I grew up with ADHD, and it was the one thing that used to really chill me out was cooking. It was like this weird, like, I was actually watching a program last night on this thing called Chef's Table on Netflix, which was really good. But there's this monk, and she says that cooking is like the closest thing you can get to kind of a day-to-day meditation if you don't meditate. It's kind of told like, kind of, because your whole being is... kind of focused on this one thing, kind of this one goal, and once you finish it, you get like instant gratification from it. So it's growing. Hopefully, we're going to get a kind of our own permanent space.
How do the kids like enroll or whatever, or find out about?
So the best way to do it. So I've kind of put it out on all of my social media, but the best way is to email chiliconcarna7@gmail.com.
Mate, you absolutely smashed that email address, mate.
Thank you very much.
That is incredible.
Yeah, I was over the moon with it.
Yeah.
It's better
than... Did you take the day off when you came up with that email address?
Yeah, weeks.
Yeah. You got it, man.
So that's the best way to do it. We're hoping to let it grow, so we're going to try and do that and then do an adult class. Because it was something I was speaking about for ages, saying that cooking was something that would have a positive effect on kids with ADHD, but I was only kind of drawing off myself, and I didn't know if it was going to be the same, if it would reflect it.
I taught kids with ADHD, and it is really difficult.
Yeah, yeah, yes,
did you have a difficult time at school?
Yeah, I did, and I appreciate kind of that it's also difficult for teachers.
Yeah,
I know I was not the easiest kid to teach, but I think it's about the understanding. It's interesting, actually. I don't know. It's about kind of have them kind of being able to have their space to learn in the way that the kind of they're made to learn.
It's really hard because, like, as a teacher, because obviously you sort of get the information about your class, and they'll say one of the kids or two of the kids got ADHD. And the problem is, you're teaching a class of 35 kids, and like, you haven't got enough time. There's not enough. They try. Schools are trying, but the money's not there. Mm-hmm. The time's not there.
Yeah.
Teachers are overworked.
Yeah.
It's insane. And the number of kids are like, even kids that haven't got ADHD, but also just academically, they're not good at the traditional subjects. It's a nightmare, man.
I can imagine.
I think you're totally... And then that's the problem, is that if you get... Kids get a negative relationship with school, and if you've got a negative relationship with school, teachers are telling you off, you're getting done for not attending or whatever, and then you just get a shit start, do you know what I mean? And then you're... your hard.
That was the whole thing about it. But I think because it's a difficult thing on both sides. It's really interesting to chat to you about it because that is the thing about it. I was kind of lucky. There was a good like special educational needs department in my school, so I got to come out of class when there was some lessons where I was struggling the most. I would come out, and that kind of makes stuff easier for the teacher for one, and also because I understand as a teacher, it's not you can't just go all right here we can do one on one or like there's three of us we can just do this and it'd be really exciting for 45 minutes because you have to teach a whole class.
How are you getting funded and stuff?
I funded it myself.
Are you serious?
Yeah, for the first one. Yeah, we had like it's fucking ridiculous. We got some funding that came through at first because I was reaching out to everyone trying to get it funded, and all the funding fell through like a month, 2 months before it happened, and I couldn't not do it, and so we reached out to the kids still, and yeah, we made it happen, and then since then we've kind of got funding through a few different places, which has been good, and we're kind of hoping to get it set up properly as soon as we can.
Oh, well done for doing it, man.
No, thank you very much, man.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
What's on the horizon next? Is there anything that we need to look out for? Are you just touring mainly?
Yeah, touring mainly now. Yeah. We're just on a bit of a world tour, excitingly enough. Touring, going to come back and do some festivals. Hopefully, I want to kind of start collaborating a little bit more now that I've kind of finished my own thing and got my first kind of thing out myself with the people I'm the closest to, kind of meet some new people who are making music.
Yeah.
I'm writing a play as well, which I'm going to try and get out.
Great. Mate, don't be a prick now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's annoying when people start doing this polymath bullshit. Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Also, yeah, I've got a fashion line and I was opening 10 restaurants. No, I'm joking. Buying a planet. Like, yeah, I'm doing a lot. Now, the play will be horrendously shit.
When is it? Is it like.
No, it's shit. Like,
you're writing it.
Yeah, I mean, but I just say it to impress. I don't really say.
No, it's
it.
What, good.
Is it a drama?
Yeah, it's actually about four men and old people. So it was just about my granddad. It's quite short. I started it before. It's whatever. It probably won't come out.
Take it to Edinburgh and Romesh can.
Yeah. Wicked.
Be what? What be can Romesh?
Gonna be
fuck
in
you,
it.
Man.
One of the old
I'll
men.
Be in it. Yeah, I'll be in it.
Are you old enough?
Yeah,
I can age up, mate.
Yeah. Just spray this up. Spray this up.
Listen, honestly, mate. It's so exciting to see what you're doing.
Thank you.
It was amazing to see you live. The only thing I don't like is that Rupert was the one that turned me on to your music.
Just
but
can't, it's nothing
loads of people, because like Mr. Jam came on and bigged you up.
Yeah.
And Jest came on and talked about your album.
Yeah,
and
blew my mind.
On Twitter, people are like going, thank you so much for getting us onto the album. So yeah. Well done. Yeah.
No,
it's
thank
amazing.
You so much for having me down. Thank you for doing things like this, because it's very important.
Well,
at a time like this.
Yeah, we need to do it because we've got nothing else going on, really. There's the truth of it. It's like what you try and do is you try and pretend that it's part of a wide range of things that you're doing. Yeah. But I'll be honest with you, mate, things are winding up for me. You know, I've had that initial kind of buzz.
Yeah.
That's gone. Do you know what I mean? Nobody wants to see another Asian provocateur. So, do you know what I mean? Yeah, but two of you and Rupert. Yeah, that's it. True. It's not.
Gonna... Oh, I could probably rope my little brother in.
Oh, okay, fine. So it's all over. So we're doing this podcast in the hope that we get some sort of syndication or something.
Well, soon, maybe, hopefully, I'll be part of that side of the podcast next time.
Yeah.
When things dry up for me, which is very soon.
Mate, you're very welcome. I think you're all right. I've got about 6 months. Rupert, really? He's already fucking.
Yeah,
he's done,
it.
Mate. His career
is
over.
This is the up for me. This is the last chance.
Really,
this is last
he's
chance.
He's pinning everything on this podcast.
Yeah,
he really is. And currently, we're running at a massive loss. But yeah. we're gonna get into the soon enough, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, can't wait. Can't wait, man. Sweet. Cheers, Law. Thank you very
pleasure.
Much. Bye, Rupert.
Bye.